You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell, and this is The Life Aquatic. As I sit down to make this recording, there are bats, little pipistrelles, flitting about just out of reach. That is because the sun has all but set here in Mallorca. It's 9 p.m, and the reason I'm recording so late is that my guests are very nearly exactly 12 hours behind me. They are halfway around the world in Tahiti. They met 6 years ago at the Woodford Folk Festival in Queensland, Australia, and began sailing together almost right away, exploring Australia's east coast, before selling their vessel and buying a bigger one in La Paz, Mexico. They sailed around Mexico for 3 years, then crossed the Pacific Ocean to French Polynesia. They have, I think, accidentally become famous. They've been featured on countless radio shows around the globe. Channel 5 Television in the UK made a documentary about their life, and they have published a bestseller, Get Real, Get Gone, about which no less than celebrated sailor and sailing author Tom Cunliffe said, "Don't even think of buying a boat until you have read this book." So Rick Page and Yasna Tuta, welcome to Boat Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
First of all, let's get a little bit of your history. Rick, how did you end up at the Woodford Folk Festival in Queensland, Australia? Were you living in Australia at the time?
Yeah, I just moved to give it a go. I had a business in Spain. I ran my own equestrian centre. I'm not a sailor at all. I have no background in sailing whatsoever. I put shoes on horses and train horses to pull carriages. So I had a business in Spain because I really loved the Spanish horse. And I was working that about 15 hours a day, and I just had enough, and I put it on the market, and I sold it in 2007. I thought I'd give Australia a bash, and so I went down to Australia, and before I was a horseshoer, I was a professional musician. And there's a great music festival, Woodford, in Australia, if you ever get a chance, if you're ever down there. Don't miss it. Fabulous way to avoid completely the complications of Christmas. You know, it starts Christmas Eve and ends on New Year's Day, so you can miss the whole lot. And if I happened to be sailing past there anyway, I'd bought a little boat in Australia, and I was sailing past, and I needed some crew for the last leg of the journey down to Sydney, which is a bit more complicated. And I put a notice on the wall, and Yasna answered the message. And she didn't speak English at the time, and I don't speak Slovenian, but we both speak Spanish, so we kind of conversed in Spanish, but I think we got it wrong because I thought she was only staying for a day, and she's been here 6 years.
Well, listen, despite not being a sailor at all and being a horseman, you were living on a boat, a Vanderstad 34. How come you ended up on a boat?
Well, I've always fancied. I read a book, actually, while I was working myself to death, getting kicked by horses. I read a book called The 200-Pound Millionaire by a writer called Weston Martin. It's open source. It's a short story. It's open source. You can get it on the internet. In 1935, between the wars, he was a retired surgeon, and he decided to see if he could live on a boat in the European canals in the Mediterranean, as he said. And it's a very interesting book and a very inspiring book. And I thought, didn't that just sound fine? That was my entire understanding of boats at the time. Then, of course, it's been a massive learning curve to the point where I was ready to actually buy one. I learned the mistakes so well, I could probably repeat them exactly.
Yasna, you met at the music festival. I mean, when you saw the notice asking for crew, did you decide then and there that you were going to run away with this crazy British man?
No, that was not the plan at the beginning. Well, I was just looking for a lift to go to Sydney, and I've always been sailing. In Italy, I worked for 10 years as a sailing instructor. But then, you know, I became crew at the beginning, but we didn't last long, maybe 4 or 5 days. And then we quickly became a couple and never went to Sydney at the end. We just turned around and went to the Whitsunday Islands in Queensland. So, that was not in the plan.
So, Rick, you travelled the east coast of Australia, New South Wales, Queensland. How much time did you spend doing that?
I spent 3 years there. The secret is not to sail around the world. The secret is to find somewhere nice that's got lots of cheap snacks and interesting sailing and affordable beer, and to learn your craft there. Don't jump in a boat as so many people are doing now and 2 weeks later head across the Atlantic. That's just crazy. And it's encouraged by several of these books that say, yes, you can sail around the world on a budget with no experience, which is utter nonsense.
So what was wrong with the Van der Staal, the 34? Because you switched vessels after sailing around the east coast of Australia. You sold it.
We did, you know, because I was, there's nothing wrong with the boat. I loved the boat. It was a fairly modern steel boat. It was just that somebody came along and offered us, the Aussie dollar at the time was buying $1.10 American. Someone came along and offered us a lot more than it was worth. And we rejected it out of hand. And then we sat down, had a little look on the internet on what you could buy in America. The Van der Staal 34 needed a fair bit of work and to turn it into a ocean basher. And we thought, well, let's take the next step. Now, we've learnt our craft. We've been sailing to offshore islands and to the Percys and up towards the Solomons and all around there. We've been in we've tested ourselves. We've learnt a lot. We're ready for the next step now. And look what you can buy over in the States for this kind of money. And so we accepted the offer and then went looking for the next boat.
Yasna, you eventually found Calypso in La Paz, Mexico. I mean, that's a long way to travel from Australia. Were you looking for a very specific boat? Do you have this Hans Christian in mind?
No, not really. We made a list of what we would like our dream boat to have. And then we just, you know, we were just looking around on internet. And you find them. We found a few we liked in Thailand and in Malaysia. So we just hopped on a plane. And first we went to Asia. Had a little bit of a look around there, but there was not really so much on the market. So we ended up in Mexico, and this was not the first boat we saw. We saw quite a few boats over there, but when we saw Calypso, we knew very well that was our boat.
Was she already called Calypso?
Yeah, she was called Cassiope. And we really didn't like the name.
We looked it up, and it was one of the daughters of Neptune, who was drowned by her father. I thought, well, who names a boat after somebody who's drowned? You know? I'm not normally one for renaming boats, but we don't made an exception in that case.
You're fans of Jacques Cousteau?
Yeah. Well, La Paz and the Sea of Cortez is where Jacques Cousteau made a large part of his movie making took place there. And at the time when we bought the boat, they were in the process of erecting a statue to him, which is now on the boardwalk of La Paz. And so, fair enough, we thought, fair play. We'll call it Calypso.
The Sea of Cortez, how long did you spend there? Because I've never actually been, but the marine life, I'm told, is absolutely extraordinary.
Oh, well, fantastic. I mean, we spent 2.5 years.
Yeah,
we spent 2.5 years everywhere. We've been in French Polynesia now for 2 years, and this is our third year here. If you set agendas, whether they're to sail around the world or to join up any other imaginary line on the planet, rather than going with the way the currents and the weather are, not only spoil the experience and just bring your A-type personality to sea, you know, you also put yourself in much greater risk.
Did you do any scuba diving in the footsteps or flipper steps, is that right, of Jacques Cousteau?
In the flippers, yeah. Yasna more than I, actually. Yasna's the real water baby. We scubaed and snorkeled with whale sharks, with sea lions.
Yeah, there's a lot of big animals. I mean, it's really, really a very rich environment. Funny enough, it's empty. There's nobody there. There's no charter boats. There is not very little tourism. So it's quite a shame, really.
They're quite big on free diving, aren't they, in the Sea of Cortez? I know there's quite a well-known school there.
Yeah, that's true.
Did you try any of that, the free diving?
I did a course, yeah, in La Paz with an English teacher. And it was quite interesting, really. I am still learning, but I really like to, when we are in this beautiful atoll here in Polynesia, I really like to pull myself down the chain, sit at the bottom and look at my boat from the bottom up.
You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell, and this is The Life Aquatic. My guests are Rick Page and Yasna Tuta, authors of the best-selling book Get Real, Get Gone, How to Become a Modern Sea Gypsy and Sail Away Forever. It's time for a short break. When we come back, we'll find out just what it's like to cross the equator hundreds of miles offshore.
Hi, I'm Sarah O'Kelly from Skipper's Review, and you're listening to Boat Radio.
Hi, I'm Dave Dempsey from Marine Intelligence. If you're the owner or captain of a superyacht, then you know how expensive internet can be. And yes, it's a ripoff. We've made it our mission to revolutionize the world of marine communications. We will find you the best price for your internet by comparing all major vendors. And we do that for free. That's right, no charge to the boat. It's a free service. We get you the best price for your yacht, whether it's just one boat or a fleet of boats, and all the savings will be passed on to you. We can save you over $1,000 per meg. So stop doing what you're doing and visit marineintelligence.net now, before you forget.
I'm Michael John, and each month on Boat Radio, I'll be looking at life on London's magnificent River Thames, from the dredgers emptying their cargoes of sand and gravel to the mudlarks combing the shore for lost treasures. I'll be meeting the people, visiting the places, and boarding the ships that work this mighty, muddy artery. So join me, Michael John, for Tales of the Thames on Boat Radio.
This is Edward Smith from OPA Racing.
This is Ken Little, president of Glock Performance Boat Challenge.
Hi, this is Frank Pillsbury with Marine Max and the DFW International Boat Show in Dallas, Texas.
We explore all kinds of boating topics on Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show. Hi, I'm Captain Bob May. We get underway, making way, Saturday evenings here on Boat Radio.
This is Heather Lohe, Director of Membership for Boat US. Thanks for listening to Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show.
You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell, and this is The Life Aquatic. I'm talking to Rick Page and Yasna Tuta, authors of bestseller Get Real, Get Gone. They live aboard a Robert Perry-designed Hans Christian 36, and right now they are in Tahiti. Yasna, you grew up in that little bit of Italy, which is actually geographically Slovenia. It's one of those quirks of world frontiers. Did you speak Slovensko growing up, or did you grow up speaking Italian?
Both. I was actually born in Italy, right on the border, basically. And it's a very strange area. It's where the border moved a lot in history, so the people are all mixed. And so it's a big community of people that are actually Slovenians but live in Italy. And I'm from there, so I have two passports, and I feel more Slovenian. I have to say that's my mother language.
You taught sailing before you met Rick. So have you taught Rick a lot since moving onto the boat?
Well, I have to say that's not really true. What I was doing was racing. So I had little boats, dinghies, and basically I was working with children. So I was taking beginners and taking them to the regattas. And, you know, we went out in the morning, came back in the afternoon. It was a lot of tactics and boat rules. I thought I knew how to sail. And when I moved aboard the boat with Rick, I realized I have to start from the beginning, because there's very few things in common between these two worlds, really. And now I really think that a cruiser like we are really has more in common with a fisherman than with a racing sailor. Lots of my friends are racing sailors, and we have our lives has nothing in common. I mean, except for the physics of sailing itself, but it's completely different world. You really don't need to have someone on trimming the sheet, main sheet, all the time when you're crossing an ocean. I mean, you trim it once and then you forget for 12 hours. And you don't need to know the tactics and, you know, try to get every lift. I mean, you will get out of your mind if you try to do that. It's a completely different world. And I actually learned from Rick a lot. We learned together, I have to say, because we both started basically from the beginning.
Did you spend a lot of time, or any time, in Venice as a child? Because it's only I don't know, 100 kilometres or so from Trieste. And I ask because it's such a magical a place and, of course, such a great city to be in if you love boats.
Yeah, I went quite often to Venice. And it's funny because that you say that, because when Rick came to Slovenia, we were sitting in the car driving around my hometown and he saw the road sign, Venice, 100 km. And he said, that's not, can't be right. I said, yeah, it's just 100 km. Let's go there. So I turned around and went to Venice. It is a magical place. But I would never live there. It's just it's like living in a museum, I think.
Yeah. It's sort of museum meets Disney, isn't it?
Yeah, more or less.
How about you, Rick? I mean, you claimed earlier on that you didn't really have any sailing background at all, but you were living on a boat, and we got a little bit sidetracked earlier. But when you moved onto the boat, when you bought that boat, the Vanderstat 34, way back when, Had you never sailed before? Did you have no idea, or did you sort of?
Yeah, no. I think I'd sat in a sailboat on a lake in North London when I was about 14, and that was it. And at the time when I bought that boat, I was actually halfway through. I signed up to do the RYA Yachtmaster in Australia, and I was actually living on the boat while I was doing the Yachtmaster course on somebody on the school boat. You know, so. Yeah, so I really did start from scratch and work it all out.
Whereabouts in the UK are you from? Are you from a coastal town?
No, I was brought up in London, and so I am a complete novice. You're looking for some sign that I'm from a salty background. So I'm a complete utter novice. I originally studied music when I left school and didn't finish that. And then I did overlands across Africa. I ran overland trips across Africa in a big blue truck. I did a engineering degree with the United Nations, and then I opened my equestrian business, and all on land. They're all on land. And then my first real contact with boats was when I moved to Australia in 2007.
So you were both in Australia, both a long way from home. Yasna, have you always had a wanderlust, or is it a fairly recent development?
Well, I have to say I always had it. I think some people are just born with it. My sister is completely the opposite. She would never leave home. And I think it's just something you have in your genes. I got a normal job. I was a teacher in a primary school. But then at some point I realized that I really have to follow this dream. And I just bought a one-way ticket to Australia and went on my own, really, with my backpack. Yeah, it's a life that really suits me. And we have this in common with Rick. We like to find a place we like and stay there for a while. But then after maybe can be a month, can be 1 year or 2 years, we say, well, now it's time to move on, to turn page and go somewhere else. That's a great thing, actually, to find someone that shares this need with you.
So, Rick, you're different. You've lived all over the world. Tell us, how have you ended up with 4 different dates of birth? And do you celebrate them all? Is it like happy African birthday?
Well, actually, I've got 4 different years, but they're all the same day. And so I've got, because I'm a permanent resident of the UK, Australia, Kenya and Spain. And Zimbabwe as well, actually. Oh, and Mexico now as well. Yeah, so quite a few. And it's often, if you're staying a while, easier to become a permanent resident and cheaper than it is to keep flying out and coming back in again to beat the visa rules. So I've ended up with a lot of permanent resident cards. And for some reason, they all put a different year. I like it because when I'm feeling like I want to knock off a few years, I can produce one piece of identity. And when I feel I want to outshine someone with my wisdom and age, I can produce another.
It's kind of like being a spy or something, isn't it? So how far have we got with your story? You are in La Paz, or you're in the Sea of Cortez. Anyway, you've been there 2.5 years. You're on board the new vessel, Calypso. And then the Pacific Ocean beckons. It's no small undertaking, that. Yasna, tell us about your passage. Presumably you spent a considerable amount of time planning the crossing.
We did. Actually, we were planning to go 1 year before that, but then we had a problem with the engine. So when we were in Mexico, we were kind of getting the boat ready for a proper ocean passage while cruising and discovering Mexico too. So was actually 2 years of working and sailing between boat yards and jobs. Our passage was, I would say, it was not too bad. It was quite long. We had very light winds, so it took us 32 days to get from La Paz to the first Marquesan island of Hivaoa. Now it looks like, it was nice and short, but if I go and read my diary, I remember, times of terror, times we couldn't wait to arrive, and times of pure happiness too.
So Rick, take us back to something that you describe actually in one of your videos. You describe the doldrums. You're a few degrees north of the equator. You're a long way from land. I've never done it. Actually, relatively speaking, very few people have done it, travelled so far from land in a small boat. So I wondered, is there a special feeling? Is there something in the pit of your stomach? Is it exhilaration, fear, joy? What did you feel?
Well, that's a very difficult question to answer, actually. Very good question. I would say it's a rather a cocktail of things. And also, I imagine that if you climb Everest, the last step doesn't feel any different than the million steps you took to get up there. I would imagine. And I've made a kind of history of getting more and more remote, you know, trying to be remote. So I'm kind of used to it. But what did surprise me was that Jasna and I are kind of the opposite of most sailing couples. Usually, and I apologize for the gender split here, but it's true enough, is that mainly the sailing impetus comes from the male half of the couple, you know, and the female half gets kind of like talked into it a bit. We're the opposite, in fact, that Jasna's always the more adventurous sailor and I'm the one who needs talking into it. And after our first few days out in the Pacific, we got hammered for the first few days. We got in a storm outside as we left Mexico, and we got hammered for 3 days straight. And it was quite horrible. I was ready to turn back to El Salvador and head for El Salvador, actually. And Yas was going, no, we'll come on, we'll keep going. And we kept going, and the weather smoothed out a little bit. And after about 2 weeks, it was me that didn't want to. I wished the Pacific was bigger when we were approaching the Marquesas. I felt kind of disappointed that we'd reached land. So I felt very, very comfortable being out there and in the middle of nowhere. Jasna was ready for the shore. I was rather disappointed.
I see. So, Jasna, was that your first time crossing the equator by boat? Was it the first time for both of you?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
So we had to make a big celebration.
I've seen the celebration on video with Rick, dressed as Neptune, in fact. And this was, when was this? April 2014?
Yeah, it was. April 2014, yeah. We turned a status from shellback, from polywog to shellback.
Mm. And you made landfall in the Marquesas. Is that where you were aiming for?
Yes, it was, actually.
Fun enough, yes.
Unusually so, yeah. No, we have absolutely no one. We have absolutely no agenda about where we go. If the wind was pushing us somewhere else, we'd have gone somewhere else. We don't go up against, we don't put our own agenda against that of the sea and the waves, as many people do. So yeah, we actually landed, the wind happened to be going where we wanted to go.
You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell, and this is The Life Aquatic. My guests are Rick Page and Jasna Tuta, authors of the best-selling book Get Real, Get Gone, How to Become a Modern Sea Gypsy and Sail Away Forever. It's time for a short break. When we come back, we'll find out what drove them to cross the Pacific Ocean rather than, say, explore South America's coast. I'm standing on the ancient battlements of Castel de Belver, on a high hilltop, overlooking the magnificent city of Palma de Mallorca, vibrant capital of the Balearics, an island group in the Mediterranean Sea, which washes the shores of Morocco, Spain, France, Italy, Croatia, Greece, and many other great seafaring nations. Arrayed before me, along Palma's waterfront and onward to the town of Arenal, are tens of thousands of boats. There are juggernauts stacked with containers, cruise ships packed with tourists, ferries, freighters, mega yachts, motorboats, super yachts, sailboats, dinghies, dories, kayaks, sculls, and skiffs. Plus, of course, the ubiquitous yacht, the traditional double-ended fishing boat of these islands. Boats are this city's business: building, maintaining, repairing, refitting, and of course, selling them. And Palma has become, has perhaps always been, a world-renowned centre of excellence for sailing and for naval craftsmanship. So there's really no better place in the world to launch Boat Radio, a station for boat owners and sailors, water sports enthusiasts, armchair adventurers, and ocean lovers everywhere. Each week, there'll be programmes from the Arctic Circle, the Bahamas, Florida, Missouri, Australia, the United Kingdom, Italy, Croatia, Mallorca, and a dozen other places, as well as from the cockpits and wheelhouses of boats.
Hello, I'm Captain Bob May from Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show, and you're listening to Boat Radio.
Each month on Boat Radio, I'll be looking at life on London's magnificent River Thames, from the dredgers emptying their cargoes of sand and gravel to the mudlarks combing the shore for lost treasures.
Each week, you can hear me swapping salty tales with sailors, surfers, swimmers, divers, boat owners, boat builders, anyone with a story to tell about their life and the relationship with the sea.
We'll hear compelling tales and inspiring stories from often ordinary people who've done extraordinary things.
We did find an iceberg, but there is no such thing as smooth sailing when you're going north or when you're sailing as much as Ben and I do.
We'll be joined by many of the most prominent names from the fields of sailing, exploration and endurance sports.
Mark getting a nice puff of breeze on Taylor Canfield, leading right. Ian Williams. Right, he's in the black boat, jiving now.
We'll delve into the glamorous world of the super yacht.
Summer comes around, we're ready to go, and all the boats start arriving back from the Caribbean, and we all get together third week of June.
But we'll also learn how to live off-grid aboard a more modest vessel.
I'm one of those lucky guys that didn't have to try and convince his wife to go on their sea dreams. I was thrilled with the idea of living on the boat.
We'll attend classic regattas at some of the most picturesque sailing locations on Earth.
I'm standing in the Fort Adams State Park in Rhode Island, looking back across the water to the city of Newport, sparkling in the early morning sunshine.
And we'll hear from scientists in some of the most forbidding environments.
Welcome to Ocean Research Project. My name is Matt Rutherford, and I am here in Sisimiut, Greenland.
There'll be recommended routes, anchorages, and marinas. There'll be practical tips, medical advice, accurate weather forecasts, and, in addition, an indelible streak of marine conservation. And we'll hear from you, I hope, listening at home or at work, perhaps afloat somewhere. So, welcome to Boat Radio. We're glad you can join us in promoting and celebrating the wonderful world of boats. You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell, and this is The Life Aquatic. I'm talking to Rick Page and Yasna Tuta, authors of bestseller Get Real, Get Gone. They live aboard a Robert Perry-designed Hans Christian 36. Rick, what was it about French Polynesia that attracted you to make this epic voyage across the Pacific? Because, I mean, you could have hugged the coast north to San Francisco Bay, or you could have journeyed south to Chile and the Cape. Why cross that huge expanse of water?
Funny enough, our main attraction was Central and South America. We're both fairly good Spanish speakers. Obviously, I had a business in Spain, and Yasna's an Italian speaker, which is fairly similar. And so we were having a wonderful old time in Mexico, and because we could, you know, converse with the local people, and I love the music, and
so the prices.
And the prices, yeah, super cheap in Mexico. So we were having a wonderful time there, and we were thinking about doing exactly that, heading down the coast and more to more Latin America exploration. But we kind of screwed up the import when we bought the boat. This is the main driving force. Is that we absolutely cocked it up. When you buy a boat in Mexico, it's illegal for foreigners to buy anything in Mexico, and you should really do it offshore. And you have to go offshore, then produce a certificate to say you did the deal offshore. A photograph of your GPS often works with a date on it. And we didn't do that. And so when we went to check out, we were going to El Salvador. When we went to check out, the very friendly port captain, and we were lucky in this respect, said, you can't do this because you didn't buy the boat legally here in Mexico. And if you try and check out, the Mexicans will actually seize the boat. And it would just happen to be a friend of ours. And so we were lucky there because at the time, I think if you were reading the press, you would see that the Mexicans were seizing a lot of boats around then. There was a big seizure of boats down in Puerto Vallarta and Banderas Bay during the regatta that weren't properly papered. They were just some diplomatic kind of backlash about something. Anyway, so we were quite shocked by that, and then we realized that as we couldn't check out, we had to disappear. So the boat was at the time registered in Delaware in America, so we re-registered it in the UK on the UK Small Ships Register, got some vinyl letters, left Mexico without checking out, completely legally, and then changed the numbers on the boat halfway across the Pacific. Because they don't really care when you arrive in French Polynesia, when you, where you've come from. The fact that you're there and smiling is good enough.
So you're in Tahiti now. For all those listeners out there, maybe contemplating a rainy day or a heavy fall of snow, because we have listeners, of course, all over the world, make us envious. What can you see right now?
Well, I'm really sorry to tell you, Mike, that we are hunkered down in a port in Pabiete, the capital at the moment, because there is a major low passing through, blowing about 45 knots and absolutely peeing with rain. So I'm sorry.
And we're in the basically in the industrial zone.
So, in the industrial zone. So it's ugly as sin. But normally, if you ask me that question any other time but now, we are normally surrounded by French Polynesia is pretty much, if you think of the Caribbean, what it must have been like 100 years ago, you know, before everyone arrived, you know. People are wonderful. The lagoons, you know, the Tuamotos and the coral lagoons are astonishing and unexplored. You can swim with sharks and manta rays. It helps if you speak a little French, but again, we didn't, but we're learning. And yeah, usually if I was to send you a photograph from the cockpit of our boat, you'd think it would have been through Photoshop.
So, well, I can make you jealous then, because I am sitting outside in my garden in shorts and a T-shirt, and it's still lovely and warm. So exploring French Polynesia inevitably leads to many days out of sight of land. You know, the islands are far flung and far apart.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you catch your dinners? Do you fish for food? Is that how you live?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We fish by trolling a line like most people do. We also spearfish. And now we've got a new toy, which I'm experimenting with, pioneered in New Zealand, which is a fishing kite, which is a kite which trawls a line offshore. And the reason I got it was in the atolls, you know, which are a little ring of coral, you know, with, you all seen them, a little paradise ring of coral, and you park your boat inside. And the atolls have got a lot of ciguatera, which is a kind of poison that inhabits reef fish. And so it's much better to get your fish offshore, but it means sitting in your dinghy and being tossed around by fairly decent swell a lot of the time, you know. And so I've got my fishing kite now, and I just walk across the atoll to the seaward side of it, launch the kite, which takes the line out about half a mile offshore and drops it in the water out there. So I'll report back to you when I've had a bit more of a play with it. But it looks like a really good way to fish for ocean fish when you're actually inside a reef-based atoll.
A fishing kite. I've never heard of such a thing. So this is another program at some point in the near future on Boat Radio. Rick Page, Fishing by Kite. Yasna, you're a primary school teacher by trade, although you have also taught sailing. But when did you realise that you'd become a writer, in fact?
Well, I did, when we started sailing, I had to find a job that can come with me whenever I go. And so it was really just the need of money. When I went home for the first time, when we decided that we are going to do this for a while, I had to go home to sell everything I had, really. My car was waiting for me, and et cetera. And I went to talk to the editor of the main sailing magazine in Slovenia. He gave me a contract straight away for a monthly 4 or 5 pages in his magazine. And I've been writing for them for 6 years now, every month. And with time, I realized that really people really like the way we write. Because I really don't pretend we're perfect sailors, or that it's always everything is good and how much fun it is. I write when I'm afraid. I write when I'm sad or terrified, or when I don't want to be on a boat in the middle of the ocean, in the middle of the storm. I'm trying to be very honest, and people really appreciate that. I can't really write all the other articles that they want me to write. I published another book as well this year, was also sold very well. And the website, I have a newsletter that I write every week. So it's I really like changing forms, write maybe some short columns, write some longer technical things for sailors. You have to, you know, keep writing different things to not get bored, really.
I mean, that's how you both make your living now, writing, because I think a lot of people are very interested in how people who live the cruising life finance it, and they assume that you've either inherited a pile of money or that you come from a wealthy family. But that doesn't have to be the case, does it?
No, that is one of the principal reasons that we wrote the book. I didn't want to write just another, sell up and sail around the world with the money you made in your property market in London book. You know, there's plenty of those. I wanted to write a book that actually detailed the money and the actual physically how you do it. It's so funny that people will tell you the most intimate details of their sex life, but as soon as you mention money, they all clam up like blushing dilettantes, you know. And so we decided to write the book and actually publish our figures of what we make and that of other people that we know, how they make their money. Normal day-to-day sea gypsies who are earning their living as they go, like we are. And of course, that leads to another prong of the same fork, is that it's much easier to earn your living if your expenses are low than it is if your expenses are through the roof with a massive flashy boat with all the blinking lights. So it leads to another area of philosophy in the book.
Celebrated sailing author and journalist Tom Cunliffe, who he's very famous in the UK, but maybe less so elsewhere. He's included your book on his must-read list, and that, by any measure, is quite an accolade. Were you in touch with Tom, or did this come out of the blue?
Well, first of all, Tom Cunliffe is our utter sailing hero. And so I sent, because we admire him, we sent him a copy for review, and he wrote back to us the most amazing letter saying that it was subversive and wonderful and brilliant, he called the book, actually.
Well, he actually said, we made him think.
Yeah, it made Tom Cunliffe think, which is quite a difficult thing to do. Not that, you know, that sounded bad. It's quite a difficult thing. If you can surprise Tom Cunliffe at anything about sailing, you know, you've obviously written something okay. So we were very, very pleased with that. He called it subversive and brilliant. And he added a tagline on the back of our book now, which says, do not even consider buying a boat until you've read this book. And that comes from Tom Cunliffe. And we were very pleased, yeah. We had a very good write-up from Good Old Boat magazine as well in America.
Yasna, as I was writing my notes for this interview, the Medium Daily Digest popped into my email inbox, and the lead article of the day is entitled, Why Quitting Your Job to Chase Your Dream is a Terrible Idea. And the piece was trying to sell the notion that, in fact, stories of people quitting the rat race and finding great success and happiness doing what they love, these stories are mostly fable or certainly very rare or rarely true. So, Yasna, are you encouraging people to be reckless with your book?
Well, I think quitting your job is, if it's something that you really really feel like you need to do right now, it's something you have to do. You know, you can go and try to do whatever life you're dreaming of. And maybe in a few years you'll see that it's not really as ideal as you thought it was. And you'll go back and restart maybe your old life, but in another way, knowing that that's actually what you want. But definitely, I don't think you should just, you know, stay in your job because you're afraid of quitting it. I think that's a very good thing, quitting a job, even just for 1 or 2 years of break before you maybe go and find a job that you like a little bit more, that you wouldn't quit.
So when did the TV crew come a knocking? When did Channel 5 get in touch?
They got in touch with us in Mexico, and they wanted to do the Ben Fogel, the New Lives in the Wild. They wanted to do that in Mexico originally. And then something came up. I can't remember. They had internal politics or something. And they said, oh, we'll do it next year. And we thought, well, we're not waiting. And so we shot off to across the Pacific. And then we were in Tahiti. And they decided they'd like to do it in the Marquesas. So we had to bash 1,000 miles back into the wind and the swell to meet them in the Marquesas.
And did you think, wow, TV, we're going to be famous now?
We are famous.
We are so famous. Yeah, Yasna got recognised in the street in New Zealand about 6 months ago. That's our only moment of fame. Some guy came and said, hey, mate, saw you on the telly last night. And not me, unfortunately, which is kind of a bit suspicious, but Yasna. Yeah, so that's officially famous, I think.
They probably thought that Yasna had brought security with her.
Well, I'm only 5'7". I don't think that's true.
You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell, and this is The Life Aquatic. My guests are Rick Page and Yasna Tuta, authors of the best-selling book Get Real, Get Gone. It's time for another short break. When we come back, we'll find out what is next for these modern sea gypsies. ¶¶
I'm Captain Bob May from Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show, and you're listening to Boat Radio.
Hi, I'm Sarah O'Kelly, founder of Skipper's Review. I started Skipper's Review because I wanted somewhere online for my local boating community to make connections and recommendations. So now it's up and running. I've been getting out of the office to enjoy the Florida sunshine and to meet some of my members. Each week, you can hear me swapping salty tales with sailors, surfers, swimmers, divers, boat owners, and builders, anyone with a story to tell about their life and their relationship with the sea. So join me, Sarah O'Kelly, with Skipper's Review on Boat Radio.
Earliest prehistory reveals mankind's innate connection to the sea, from boats of woven reed in Egypt, to Homer's black ships of the Trojan War, down to the naval battles of Greece, Rome, and every civilization since. I'm Brandon Huebner, and I'll present the history, archaeology, and literature that connect us with our past on the sea, all that on the Maritime History Program. Join me as we voyage down through the ages and witness the development of sailing, trade, and much more. The Maritime History Program, with me, Brandon Huebner, every Wednesday here on Boat Radio.
You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell, and this is The Life Aquatic. I'm talking to Rick Page and Yasna Tuta, authors of bestseller Get Real, Get Gone. Rick, there's a peculiar dichotomy, if that's the right word, when it comes to sailing. On the one hand, you have huge skies and an ocean of possibility spread out before you. And then on the other hand, your movement is restricted because you're living in a fairly confined space, you know, a floating caravan. Do you ever find yourself desperate for a long walk or a bit of a run around or even just to go for a drive? Or does a swim satisfy that desire?
Well, yes, obviously. I mean, I don't think there's any such thing as the perfect life. You're just going to pick the bits that suck less than other bits, really. I mean, I'm sure if you're living, as I was, you know, in a farm on the mountains of Spain, looking out at the horizon and my 30 Andalusian horses, you know, there's something else you want, you know. And so you just got to pick the things you like. I mean, there's a price to pay. And it's a very small price, really, because let's face it, everyone thinks they want to go for a run, but how many of you actually go out there and run, you know? Suddenly when you can't, it becomes important. But yeah, we can always go for a swim unless we're passage making. And for most people, passage making, even permanent liverboards like us, is a very, very small part of sailing. Most of the time, your coastal hopping when you've arrived somewhere. Most sailors' time is spent at anchor. So you can always go ashore and have a run and check things out. There's nothing really much you can't do on a boat except that those rare times that you're crossing ocean.
Yasna, do you have a grand plan? I mean, do you know where you're going to be next week or next month?
Well, we have plans, but we very rarely follow. No, you have to have a kind of seasonal plan because of the cyclone season in the tropics. So you have to have an idea of where to be in a safe place when the rainy season comes. But apart from that, we like to improvise. We like to have the option of if we find a nice place to stay for 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, why not? That's why we make plans, but they are very loose. So this year we are saying, well, we'll probably go towards Tonga and Fiji and probably do 1 year in Fiji, one more season there, slowly going to Australia. It's a plan, but very, very vague. So yeah, our destination is Australia in the long term, but we might get there in 1 year or maybe in 10, who knows?
Can you see yourself continuing around the world for many years to come, Yasna? Or will you hanker for a house again one day.
I don't know. We had a few months in a house this year. We really liked it. We really liked having a car. You know, everything that we are usually dreaming of. But it's just because it was a holiday. As I said before, we both like to change our lives, what we do every, I don't know, few years. And so we might carry on, but we might just decide to sail Calypso and to find something else to do, which might be on the sea, might be on land, who knows.
Rick, what do you love most about boat life?
I enjoy having a moat, I must say. If you want to get a little bit of separation from the madness of the world, you can get yourself a castle in Scotland and get a moat, but that's quite difficult. But all sailors, I think we all like having a bit of a moat. A little separation between you and the increasing insanity of life on land. I remember I was asked a question on Australia, on ABC National Radio there, aren't you running away from real life? I thought that's really nuts question, because when you're a sailor, as all the sailors listening here will know, you're dealing with nothing but real life. The life and death of fishes are in your hands. The wind, the tide, the sun, the current, these are all real, genuine parts of life. Reality is one thing you cannot ignore when you're on a boat. Yet if you want to ignore reality, the best way to do it is to go ashore and stick your head in Facebook or on your iPhone. It's a very, very strange question. And I get asked it a lot. To answer the question, it is that I like the absolute focus on very real things, real reality, and not the virtual reality that most people seem to live in.
You know, we were joking about it a few minutes ago, but you are actually getting to be pretty well known. You know, you've been on dozens of TV and radio shows. There's been a documentary made about you. You've got a couple of best-selling books now. I mean, did you ever foresee yourself or yourselves becoming cheerleaders for this life that you lead?
No, but I think the book, I didn't want to write a book actually. Yasna was saying, I should write a book. And I said, well, can I write what I really think? And I know it has caused a little bit of controversy, particularly amongst the racing world. And not everyone agrees with what I say, but it is genuinely what we think.
So, I think life on a boat is not really an easy life. And so even if you're 100% convinced you want to do that, there will be moments when you'll regret your decision. And so we know that. And that's why we are not trying to convince anyone that this is the perfect life, an easy life. What we want to do is just try to help someone that already knows that that's what he wants to do.
Exactly.
To achieve it.
Exactly. It's an instruction manual for non-rich people with bigger dreams than pockets.
So, Rick, I sold up in London. I burned all my bridges. I transported my family here to Mallorca. And every day, something amazing will happen to us. We'll be sitting on the beach and a flamingo will come into land right next to us. My four-year-old daughter will suddenly strike up a conversation with a shop assistant in fluent Catalan, to everybody's surprise. Or I will have a fascinating conversation with two people, you guys, almost exactly on the other side of the world from me. And isn't the audio amazingly clear, given that we're so far apart? But do you think, in fact, that it is a state of mind? Do you and other modern sea gypsies like you, and to a degree me as well, do we simply share a sense of wonder? I mean, is that the secret?
Yeah, I think so, actually. Funny enough, we were talking about it the other day, and I don't really care if somebody's particular views or anything, but if they're curious, I've noticed that we always tend to like people who are curious. It doesn't matter whether they're what they're curious about, but something, you know. I mean, we were just discussing it the other day. There are far too many pictures of girls in front of mirrors with their iPhone, and not nearly enough of them reefing a mainsail, you know. You've got to be more curious about something than promoting your image on Facebook. 15 years ago, crazy people were just laughed at. Now they're linked to, you know, they're all holding hands and spouting opinions. They're not really curious. They're just concerned about disseminating their own idea of themselves and their own images on Facebook and media. So I think that there is a connection between all people that I like anyway, and they're all curious. I think that's it, yeah, curious. It doesn't matter what you do. We have found this way of life. Somebody else might want to live in a shed on top of a mountain, I don't know, or breed yaks or something, or train canaries to ring little bells. I don't know what they're doing. But as long as they're curious and care about something, then I usually like them.
Rick Page, Jasna Tuta, thank you so much for being such wonderful guests and for sharing your amazing life with us today. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you both. Thank you so much.
Pleasure was all ours.